Hi, this is Tom Brevoort, and you are listening to the Captain America Comic Fans Podcast.
Greetings, Cap fans, and welcome to episode 126 of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast. This is Rick Verbanas. I'm your host. And I am joined by the best gosh darn co-host out there. And that is a Mr. Bob Lucius. Oh, Bob. I'm the innocent bystander. Somehow I got stuck between the rock and a hard place. And I'm down on my luck. Yes, I'm down on my luck. Well, I'm down on my luck.
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure, unless you're a Warren Zevon fan out there, you would know that the next line is, "And I'm hiding in Honduras. I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns, and money. The shit has hit the fan."
Who is? I don't even know who that is.
Warren Zevon?
Yes.
Oh, Warren Zevon was a... I wouldn't call him a rock star. He was a little bit avant-garde, but he was in the late 70s and the 80s. He had a few hits, but he was his biggest hit was probably like Werewolves in London.
Oh.
No, it's ooh.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Werewolves in London.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Excitable Boy. Down on my luck. Send lawyers, guns, and money is it's a cool song. But anyway, I thought that line, "I'm the innocent bystander. I got stuck between a rock and a hard place, and I'm down on my luck," that aptly describes Steve Rogers in Dimension Z and Warren Zevon.
Oh,
Dimension Z.
You did not.
I totally did. I was like, all right, I've got to figure out how I'm going to do a different hello for this Dimension Z. And I decided, Bob, I threw down the gauntlet. I made it tough on myself. I am going to do a hello that somehow ties in with the letter Z for the next 8 episodes after this, you know, where we do this running story of Castaway in Dimension Z, which is volume 7 that came out in 2013 by Rick Remender. We did the first part in episode 122. And then we're going to be doing this the second Wednesday of every month for 10 months. And I'm like, I got to come up with a different hello for you. Every one of these, I can't tie it into 2013. That'd be too tough. But I'm going to make it tougher. I'm going to tie it into the letter Z for Zola. And today it was Warren Zevon. And I thought this song was apropos because Steve Rogers is stuck between a rock and a hard place in Dimension Z. It is a really hard situation for him.
Wow. Bravo. Bravo, Rick. And you really have put a marker out there. I'm going to do all these Z-related hellos. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this unfolds.
I got to give you something to look forward to, Bob. I've since resigned myself to the fact that our listeners could care less about a different hello. They're like, it's been 100 episodes. Please just say hi. No, I'm like, I want to challenge myself to make it interesting for you, Bob. So, because I loved seeing the look of anticipation on your face after I say, "Oh, Bob." Yeah, just like that.
It's like Pavlov's dog, right? I just like, what?
If people could see the video of this. All right. So, Bob, how you doing? What's going on?
I'm doing well. I'm still recovering from our Roy Thomas interview.
And, that was good, wasn't it?
It was good. It was exciting for me. It was so much fun. And preparing for it was a lot of fun.
We didn't get to half our questions.
I know. That was a disappointment, right? But I had a lot of fun preparing for it and going back and reading a lot of those old Avengers and Liberty Legion stories and some of the Cap annuals that he wrote. And it was a ball. So I hope the listeners enjoyed that episode.
Yeah, that was certainly a lot of fun. We got to figure out who our next guest is going to be because we do like I said before, we do that on the first Wednesday of every month. So stay tuned. And for our patron fans, the ones who help support the show, thank you very much. They get to hear who our guest is going to be weeks in advance, and they get to submit a question. So that's just one of the perks of being a patron of the show. And if you want to learn more about how you can be a patron of the show, if you want to help support us, because, you know, we do have our expenses and our costs, and, you know, it's nice the fact that we have some people out there to help us pay for those. Go to our website, which is CaptainAmericaComicBookFans.com.
That's right. And there was a little bit of, you know, not consternation. That's too strong of a word, Rick. But, you know, showed off my...
Do you use X-Lax for that, Bob?
Funny you should mention that, Rick. We'll come back, we'll come back to X-Lax later. But my watch face, you know, I showed that in the Facebook group this week. And there was a lot of interest in that. And folks wanted to go, where can I get that image? And you can only get that image if you have the coin. And the only way to get that challenge coin, Rick, is to become a patron.
That's true. Yeah, very well. Very, very well put. Now you've got me all interested in the X-Lax story. Let's get to that.
No, we're gonna have to dive into the book first.
and then you'll just let it run.
It'll hit you. As it usually does.
Hey, Bob, you know what we haven't talked about in a long time?
It's personal, but my colonoscopy?
While we're on the subject. No, we haven't talked about reviews on Apple Podcasts.
Right, yeah.
Right? iTunes reviews, right? And we haven't talked about because, well, we haven't gotten any. But we have gotten a new one, Bob, and I thought I would share it.
Oh,
with you, right? Because I know you don't care and you don't go to iTunes and check them out, but I do, and I want to pass this one along to you. So this one is from Walter in Tucson. Now Walter is somebody who has been a patron of the show and has is also part of our Facebook group. But he said, "Yeah, I'm finally getting around to doing a 5-star review on Apple, and we really do appreciate that." So here it is. And the title he put to this one is, "I could listen to this all day."
Some of the shows last all day, so he's in luck.
I know. Well, you know, it was a nice little pun, play on the whole,
right, yeah,
you know, MCU, Captain America, "I could do this all day." So I could listen to this all day. Well, done, Walter. I like that. He says, "Man, this podcast is great. If you have a love for Captain America or just want to learn more about him, this is the place to go. Very entertaining, and the creator interviews they do are awesome. Just finished listening to an interview with Eric Larson. Such great stuff. 5 stars.
Love it. Love it. You know, there was a comment earlier. Was it, I know, maybe a week or two ago, Rick? I was just reading through, you know, the comments in the Facebook group, and someone said something positive about the podcast, which which is awesome.
Oh, Bob, you need to take that.
It's my wife. Hold on. she's out of town. So she's up in Tallahassee.
And she doesn't know you recorded?
What the hell? She knows this. I told her this. But all right. So so there was a comment, you know, a week or two, I think, on Facebook. And someone said that one of the things they enjoyed about this podcast, and I'm paraphrasing here, right, was that we're kind of humble, right? We admit what we don't know.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? We're not sort of priggish about,
he said snobbish, I think.
Snobbish. That was the word, right? Snobbish about the older stuff over the new stuff. We cover it all, mm-hmm, right? Everything from the newest released volume back to golden age stuff,
yep,
on occasion. So, and we try to do that because we're fans like everyone else. And we realize that folks have their you know, their favorites, their favorite eras, their favorite creators. And we want to cater to everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at this point, if someone's new to the podcast, they could just go and go, look through the 125 issues and their episodes, and they could totally find a handful of things that they definitely, you know, that's their time period, right? So, and we try to do, you know, we mix it up. We do 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. We do current stuff. We do mini series. We're going to actually mix it up for next episode. I will save that for the end. But anyway, just getting back to the Apple podcast review, I just want to, again, put a little plug out there because it does help us get, you know, notice. It gets us help with new listeners. So thank you, everybody out there who has given us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. If you haven't, please do so. And we really appreciate it. And, you know, maybe we'll mention it here on the air. Oh, and don't forget, I did say before, and you could also put in the notes of the review, and I want Rick to read it in this character's voice or this funny voice or this accent or something, and I will do that for you.
I won't, but Rick will. Yes.
The best you'll get from Bob is a pussing swing. Oh, so Bob, birthdays. We got some birthdays from famous Captain America creators. It's a couple interesting ones here in that a few days ago was on March 6th was Kieran Dwyer.
Kieran, happy birthday.
Kieran Dwyer celebrated a birthday on March 6th. Definitely has a maybe like a top five Captain America artist for me, only because I really loved that period. Like when he came on board after Paul Neary, I really just was like, wow, this is really cool. Like it was a whole new level. And some of the stories that he worked on was really cool. I mean, obviously, the Bloodstone Hunt was up there. And obviously he worked on, you know, the Captain story, you know, and so on. So he was a co-creator of Crossbones. Great, great artist. And he's still out there doing commissions. I don't know if he's doing any regular work, but he is out there still doing commissions.
I love Kieran, and I'd love to get a commission by him one of these days, Rick, but you know me, I'm saving my pennies. So I'm out of the commission business for now.
What are you saving up for, Bob?
I am saving up for one more big golden age book.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I want it to be a wartime book. So, you know, and in particular, I want it to be a wartime book that either has access power on the book. So either the Nazis or the Japanese. So, as opposed to, you know, like a home front cover with saboteurs or, you know, so I'm saving up for that.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Bob, we probably should get to the comic. So today we're covering Castaway in Dimension Z Part 2, which is Volume 7, Number 2. It came out 10 years ago, Bob. So if you were in the comic store at this time, 10 years ago, you would be finding this on the shelf. And it had a cover date of February 2013. And the creative team, we already talked, I think, a little bit before about Rick Remender, but penciler John Remender Jr., inker Klaus Janson, a lot of colorists on this one, interesting enough. We have Dean White, Lee Lowridge, and Dan Brown. We have three different colorists, which I find very interesting. Letterer is Joe Caramanga. Editors, Tom Brevoort and Lauren Senkovich. Would you like to hear the solicitation for this one, Bob?
I sure would, Rick.
And there's a quote. Remember their faces, their families. Remember what they love. Learn how to turn it against them. Artem Zola's ambitions leave Captain America stranded in the upside-down territory known as Dimension Z. Steve has saved the life of Zola's son, but can he keep him alive? Who are the barbarians of Phrox, and what are their intentions for Steve and his new ward? Find out in Episode 2!
That sounds exciting.
It is. We should probably get to that.
Rick, did I mentioned last time, this is the only volume. And in fact, I think it was probably the first maybe 8, maybe 10 issues that I had a subscription. So I didn't have to go to the comic book store to get this. It showed up in my mailbox.
Yes. In the brown paper bag. And it was usually damaged every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they were well beyond the paper bag at that point. It was a polypropylene shrink wrap bag. So even worse. So yeah.
Yeah. No protection whatsoever. Bob, you want to describe the cover to our listeners?
Sure. Yeah. So it is, it's a perspective looking down at an angle to Steve Rogers in his Captain America attire, but lacking the cowl. And he's got his shield slung over his left shoulder. Mm-hmm. And he's holding in his right hand one of those fancy newfangled Zola weapons, a rifle of some sort. Mm-hmm. And then he's holding the hand with his left hand of a small boy, Ian, Zola's created, son, mm-hmm. Who at this point looks to be, maybe six years old, seven.
Yeah, that's totally wrong. I don't understand that, but we'll get to that in the story.
And it's nice to point out it's a very the background, of course, there's smoke, there's fog, it looks like a desolate area, and Steve doesn't look happy, right? He's got mm-hmm. he's got a seriously I'm not going to even say that. I'm not going to say what I call it when my wife has that look. But but I've seen this look before, and it means business.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think you put it aptly. But you left out the fact that Cap's got long, shaggy hair, right?
Indeed. Right.
As well as the little boy he's holding, in his hand. Well, he's holding the hand of a little boy, I should say.
Right.
He's got long, shaggy hair. And also the Cap's uniform has got some tears to it and some, some damage to it.
Yeah.
So we don't see Cap like this. Yeah. This is a very unusual way to see Captain America.
And he's got the beard going.
Yeah.
Right. So,
yep.
Yeah.
And then the cover logo is Captain America with Captain in white. And then America, three times the size of Captain in a red, white, and blue. But it's not the curved logo. It's just a straight logo. So it's certainly a new logo for this volume. And I think we should probably read the recap of last episode or mm-hmm. last issue. I will point out that if you've not listened to episode 122, that's when we do part one of this. You should probably go listen to that and then come back here and listen to 126.
It'll definitely make more sense that way.
Yeah. But if not, and for those who did listen to it when they came out and it's like 4 weeks later, here's a nice little recap for you.
Previously, as a hero and Avenger, Captain America has fought countless villains and made a number of powerful enemies. It was in the dark days of World War II that Captain America first foiled the maniacal plots of the biofanatic Arnim Zola. Now, Zola has kidnapped Cap and smuggled him into his twisted Dimension Z for his heinous scientific experiments.
Drugged Is it heinous or heinous?
I guess it could be either way, Rick. Do you want to look it up on Wikipedia?
I've never heard it called heinous. It's not like he's a heinous. Your heinous?
Is it tomato or tomato? Drugged and confused, Cap managed to make his escape along with an infant child he discovered in Zola's lab. Together, they have crash landed in the desolate wastelands of Dimension Z. .. Are you a fan? Are you anti or pro ellipse, Rick?
I don't. I am anti the way you do it.
Are you?
Oh yeah, you like trigger me when you do your lips. I'm a big fan of lips. If anybody knows that, if they go into the Facebook group and like I post things, okay. I do the dot, dot, dot. First of all, anybody who does two or four, you're wrong. I'm just going to tell you right now, you're wrong. It's three. It's always three, or it's a period or it's three. Yeah. That's it. There's no other way. That's just, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
But how you do it, Bob, you do the three.
Yeah.
And then you go right into the next word. There's no space after the three.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That is, that is crazy. There's a pause. Ellipses is a pause.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you go right into the next word, there's no pause. It's dot, 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 space, the next word. And honestly, I don't know if you ever noticed this. You when you prepare questions, you know, for like, for instance, Roy Thomas, right? Yeah. You prepare questions. I prepare questions. We share our questions. We go over our questions, right? You send me a Word document and it has dot, dot, dot. And then it goes right to the next word. I do a seek and replace. And I change them all to dot, 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 space.
I have never noticed that. And now I know why it takes you so long to get them back.
Now you're just gonna like do it on purpose.
Chock-a-block full of
you're gonna be on Facebook. I guarantee you, listeners, I tell you right now, if you go into the Facebook this week, Bob's gonna Bob's gonna go in, he's gonna start writing stuff, dot, 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 no space.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's a detour.
Yes. All right. But I want our listeners to give some feedback. We're going to get Bob's absolutely right. Rick's absolutely right. Or
what the hell is an ellipse?
Oh my God. Who cares?
You forgot what the hell's an ellipse, right? Isn't that something they got down in Washington, D.C. on the mall?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
All right. And when did Arnim Zola end up being in World War II? I thought he was introduced by Jack Kirby in like 206, 207, right? Mm-hmm. In modern quote unquote times, for Steve Rogers. When did he become a World War II foe?
I think this is a retcon, Rick. And I think there have been a handful of other stories. I can't remember off the top of my head now that have retconned him as you know, sort of been in the mix during, and now he wasn't, you wouldn't see him in any of those stories necessarily with Strucker or the Skull, but a couple stories have shown him as a young man during World War II. So,
okay. Well, I mean, I think they're, but probably,
I don't
just
think he didn't fight Cap in World War II. I don't recall any stories where he came
it,
up.
Well, dude, you read it yourself. Were you not listening? You said the dark days of World War II that Captain America first foiled the maniacal plots of the biofanatic Arnim Zola. You said it yourself.
No, but what I'm saying is that I don't think it was a direct, you know, I think, you know, Zola was, you know, working for the Nazis at the time. And I think in the stories, and I'll have to, I mean, I'll go back and try to find them, right, where they were. But I think he was like creating things for the Nazis that Cap went up against. But I don't think he ever personally went up against him in any of the stories.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you probably should go back and dot, 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 research that.
Okay, I will. I'll be sure to write an essay about that and post it on Facebook.
I appreciate that. Okay, so let's get to the story. So we cut to the opening page, and it says 1 year later.
I love this splash page.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wowzers. We just skipped a year, Bob.
Have you seen this splash page available out there?
Yeah.
You know? Wonder what this one goes for.
It's like 25 grand.
It's a full page splash.
Yeah. So 1 year later, let's just let that sink in.
Yeah.
Captain America has just spent a year in Dimension Z.
Yeah.
That's big. That's huge. Is big. Right.
Can you think of any other story arc that time jumps like this?
I've seen it, but nothing comes to mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to do, right? Because, you know, it really messes with a lot of continuity if you're jumping that far ahead, right?
And so unless you explain it like they do at the end of this story, but we'll get to that later.
You're in a separate dimension.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. True. 1 year later. Wow. He's been in Dimension Z. So we cut to the next page. And it says, it's a bad place to set camp, open from too many angles. But the boy's tired, and there's water here. Last of the snow melt. This winter came quickly and brought the spider wolves. We got lucky, got out of that cave we camped in, but only just. Do not want to be here to see another winter. Ian hasn't been fed for days. I could find something. The desert is teeming with strange life. Smoke lizards, sky eels, giant red ants with soft human faces, and more. Zola's experiments. Hunting takes strength. Need to conserve what I have. A sandstorm is coming. Have to make that mountain range before it does. So I'm just going to pause here to kind of describe what's going on. So Cap is in this boy, this Zola boy, are sitting on near the edge of a cliff, right?
Right.
And Cap has his shield in the fire upside down as he's cooking something in the shield. He's using it as a pot in this fire, and there's a big fire, there's smoke. So obviously, it is dangerous. He's right. They are out in the open, and he's just putting a big signal out there for anyone to come get them. But it is the middle of the night. It's a purple sky, lots of stars, a moon here or there. But the boy, Bob, you said on the cover the boy looked about 6. Now, maybe he is. He could be 4, 5, or 6, right? But it's 1 year later. He was an infant.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. That's Zola.
Yeah, unless there's a Zola experiment explanation.
Indeed.
And Cap, like you mentioned before about the cover, you know, he's got his mask off and he's looking pretty tattered. He's got the long blonde hair and the beard. And this is really the first time we're seeing him like this, right? Because at the end of issue 1, you know, he was still kind of, you know, fresh, clean shaven, just came back from a mission. Now it looks like, you know, he's been out here for a while. He's looking very tattered. And he looks at the boy and he says to himself, that calm smile of his, a constant reminder, he's in this situation because of me. And he scoops some sort of liquid from heating in the shield and he hands him the cup. We'll find food tomorrow, I promise. And he pats him on the head. Some hard days behind us, but no matter how bad it's been, Ian never flinches. Trust me to get him through it. So we just found out the boy's name is Ian. The environment is inhospitable on all fronts. Life spent on the limits of exhaustion and complete collapse. The twin suns will rise soon, for longer than I'd like, and never from the same horizon. Impossible to mark time or direction by them. And he's laying there, and Ian is kind of nestled on his stomach as he's holding him. Maybe a year since I arrived at Zola City. Drugged so heavily during the escape, we've flown hundreds of miles before the crash. No way to know which direction the strange metropolis is in, or the tunnel that will lead us home. First, I need to find Zola, find out what he injected into my chest, why I've had headaches every day since. Chest still sore to the touch, even after all this time. Better not think about it. can't afford fear. Not now. Ian is counting on me to get him out of this. And he reaches for a sack that he has next to him, and he pulls out a little box. It's almost like a ring box. Nights are the worst. When Ian's sleeping and no longer in need of constant attention, leaving me to ponder harsh realities. What happens if I can't find the way home? How long can we keep doing this? Stranded here, fighting forever. And he opens up the box. And Bob, what's inside it?
There's a bullet, Rick. Yeah, and it's engraved.
What's it say?
It says diligence.
How would you define that, Bob?
Well, how would I define diligence? I don't know. I guess I would define it in terms of, synonyms, attention to detail, applying appropriate, effort to mm-hmm. a task. Yeah. Diligence, right?
It's curious that that's engraved on the bullet.
It is.
And he takes the bullet out and he stares at it in his hand. Where's our breaking point? How many years will pass before we find some sign of hope? When will it become too much? The other way out? And he puts the bullet back in and snaps close, and it makes a little clip noise as he closes the box. The other way out isn't one you consider. And then we go to a flashback. Essex Street, the Lower East Side of Manhattan, 1926. And we see a young Steve Rogers in overalls holding up a newspaper. And he's yelling out, "News, hot off the press, get your paper, 2 cents." "Thank you, sir." A man takes the paper and drops him 2 pennies. But then just then, like a part of a brick gets thrown in the back of his head and hits him really hard. And he goes flying forward. And we see this, I don't know, like a teenage boy standing there with his hand up against the wall and his other hand on his hip. "Had your old man finally up and drank himself to death. It introduced me to your ma. And I'll keep her warm for you." And he's got two buddies there with him.
"Hitting too low, Hutch."
"Ma's are off limits. Street code." "I'll show you too low." And he goes over and he kicks in the stomach Steve, who's there bleeding in the back of his head just on the ground. "Your ma's a knockout. I'm just thinking how to do my part to help her. If you're thinking about it, be helping you too, shrimpo. I'd be your new pa. I'd drink all night, bum around with other dames. You know, just like your real pa." He's tearing up with joy at the idea, Hutch. "You lousy little rat. Keep my bedroom activities out of your creepy head, will you? And don't worry none. We'll sell your papers for you." And they grab his big stack and walk away. We cut to the apartment that he lives in with his ma, and we see the grandpa there. And Steve's ma is Sarah. She's dressing, looking in a mirror. She's putting on a hat. "And they have us on double shifts at the garment factory all week. You'll read to Steve before bed, Papa?"
"Of course I will, Sarah."
And see to his studies. And he walks through the door, all bloody. "Stephen! My God, what happened? They said stuff about you. Said stuff about Dad. That he was a bum. That he was no good." And the grandpa comes over and he puts something compress on the back of his head.
"You don't listen to them boys, Steve. They don't know us and they didn't know your father. He was a good man, but he lost hope. A man who loses that, he loses everything." And we cut back to
Captain America with his young ward walking along this plain that has a lot of dust up coming up, and it's very windy. Last one of these sandstorms nearly killed us. Without shelter, we won't last long. The mountain range is our best hope. Too far, but no other option. This ability is shot. Just have to move straight. If we get pushed even a few feet in the wrong direction, we'll be lost, stuck out here in the storm with the bad things it brings. And it cuts to these two Rocky characters that are watching the two of them. Nearly all the physics of the place are off. The stars never hold a constant pattern. Gravity shifts from day to night. Extreme swings in weather with little warning. No respite from danger. Green streamers are ahead. Another hard lesson. What are green streamers, Bob?
I don't know, Rick. What are they?
You can describe them though, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were asking me as if they were real things. I'm like, I don't know what they are, but they appear to be some sort of, they almost look like grass-like blades that slither up through the soil. Mm-hmm. It appears that, they are very sensitive to the touch. And so much like a minefield, you have to pass through them very carefully.
Bait used by the things under the sand. No choice but through. And he picks up and he holds Ian in his arms. Slow and quiet. Ian holds tight. He remembers what's down there. And he slowly walks through. One wrong step and it's all over. Endless angles to watch. Endless predators. Predators in an environment they evolved in. They know how to hunt, know how to exploit the weakness of prey stumbling through their territory, and they're all just as hungry as we are. And I know nothing. After all my time in this place, it's as foreign to me as the first day. And we see these two sky cycles flying overhead, and there are these two mutates flying them. No. Foreign and full of danger. And they, how would you describe these mutates, Bob?
It's, they are ridiculously unusual, Rick. If we didn't know we were reading a story about Arnim Zola in some respects, we would say these look like Zola, the biofanatics creations. They have a body that is very, dinosaur-like, right? It's they're armored, and they've got these fins that are armored on their back, and they have big, wide mouths with lots of big, square, white teeth. They're very terrifying, but they appear to be sentient, right? I mean, they appear to be able to converse and think and obviously ride sky cycles.
Yeah, and they talk funny. Frock sweep, eat now, murder. And the other one says, Ildril, kill. Murder, slice. And they fly over the two of them, but circle back to come in for the kill. Go. Like running from a sniper through a minefield. Some basic rules. Trust your gut. Don't second guess a step. And pray. Turn around. Surrender. Let them take Ian to safety. Missiles, they don't recognize us. And these idiots aren't looking for prisoners. They're looking for kills. And the missiles come over top of them, and Cap puts his shield up, and it makes a loud noise. Explosion, Bob. Proceed accordingly. And he takes his shield and he slices one of the rider's sky cycles as it's flying by, which then falls and explodes. No guarantee I can keep Ian safe in retreat, and I can't risk playing nice. They aren't human. You taste our good murder. And he starts, the other one on the cycle starts firing. I like that. You taste up our good murder. That's a little broken English there.
I can't place the accent.
Yeah. They're genetically engineered evil. Count it out. He's almost here. No hesitation. No soul escapes the mutates. No mercy. And he goes up and he uses his shield and he smashes right into the face of one of them. And it makes a loud noise, but
shut your cook.
His face crumbled. Grizzly beasts, but their bones do break. Gives me steam to face the thing hissing, slurs behind me. And the fire unraveling in his fists. And sure enough, the other mutate, the first one who fell, comes walking towards him. And he's like, it's almost like he's holding lightning bolts in his hands.
Oh.
We eat when we please. Cook it and eat. We knows you will feel. Now to burn. And he takes the lightning bolts and he slams them down. Napalm heat. Chainmail searing my skin. Ian screams. Can't outrun it. One more shot and we're dead. So I do the last thing I should. And he pulls on one of the green, what are they called again? Green sleeves, green wiggles?
Green streamers.
Green streamers. Thank you. See, and you said your memory is bad.
Yeah.
He pulls on the green streamer. And what comes up from underneath is a gigantic, huge, like dinosaur-looking thing. It actually looks more like the big giant worm that comes out of the asteroid in Empire Strikes Back after the Millennium Falcon.
Indeed. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Or that, you know, I was thinking Dune, you know, and the sandworms.
Exactly. And it just takes one of them and bites it in half. Wake up the thing under the sand and be gone before it sees us. But it does see them. Dear God, bigger than the others. Seconds from charging. Run, Ian, go. I read that Hemingway once faced a charging rhino on a safari. The key to his survival? Wait till the beast is at point-blank range. And he picks up one of those fallen laser pistols. And he fires. And shoot. And he shoots it right in the head as it's getting close to him. That's a loud noise, Bob.
It is. And I'm not exactly sure how to read that one, Rick, but it goes something like Zakoom.
Very nice. And then he falls down. Stunned or dead? We don't know. What do you think?
I hesitate to say dead. That, yeah? That's big.
It is, yeah.
You know?
I want to go, he's stunned. You just moved the cage. No, I didn't. He's pining for the fields. So Steve puts his arm around the little boy and he says, okay, it's okay now. Look at me, Ian. And then remember those rock creatures I mentioned before that were watching them and in the sandstorm?
Yeah.
They come up behind Captain America and they yell, Zola. And they hit him. And it goes dark. And then Steve wakens to the voice of Papa? Papa? Ian? Are you all right? Hurts like hell. My brain's reward for having the audacity to wake up. And he's chained to a wall. He's kneeling, but he's chained with his arms above his head to the wall. And Ian is chained as well. And across from him is that mutate. And the mutate says, me would be eating the meat. That is my right. The right of Zola. Zola's mutate, wheezing through the jaw I smashed. I'm scared, Papa. Listen to me. We're okay. I'll find a way. And then those rock creatures that are wearing armor come up, and they start speaking another language. Countless months spent praying for some sign of civilization. Now that we found it, all I feel is dread. And they take the prisoners and start walking them. No trouble. We're not looking for, even though the pounding in my skull, every instinct I have is on high alert, broadcasting the same message. My God. And then we turn to the next page, Bob, and it is a double page splash, not a full splash. I would say probably like a 3/4 page splash, but yeah, it is double page. So you can see the whole thing. And then there's a couple of panels on the bottom that spread across the two pages. And it's quite the scene. How would you describe it?
Well, it's, you know, you're looking down from a high level, you know, several stories up, what looks to be a throne room of some sort, mm-hmm, with a big stone throne on a dais in the middle. And somebody's sitting on that throne, and he happens to be holding Cap's shield. And then there's a couple individuals at his feet that look like maybe females of his species. And then the room is filled with many of these rock creatures that had captured Steve and Ian. And they're leading Cap and Ian down the stairs from the upper levels down to the throne room itself.
And they do look civilized, right? I mean, it looks like a... I mean, this isn't a cave, right? I mean, this is actually a structure, and they are wearing some sort of clothes and standing at attention.
There's no rubble.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, Fred.
That's a different rubble. Sorry. We are not among friends. Wake up. Take it in. Find your options. Not many. Our captors have fleshy seams between their hard shell armor, likely points of weakness. The problem is those staps, the glowing crystals sapping my strength. Fighting isn't an option. Talking might be. Hank Pym built a universal language adapter into my armor plate. If I can activate it, we might be able to communicate. Get an idea what they want. The large alpha on the throne, surrounded by female servants, spells it all out. He's the law. And he yells in his tongue at Steve and the other captives. A tyrant is never inviting to foreigners. And then he stands up, and he's, like you said before, Bob, he's holding his shield. He's got it in his right hand. He's a large being, right? Larger than Steve. And he speaks. And both the mutate and Steve, their heads are put on chopping blocks. And Steve looks at Ian in the face. No matter what happens, Ian, keep your eyes on me. Okay. And the leader holding Cap's shield says to the first one, Zola?
Yes, I serve Zola, and I'm proud of... Shunk.
He uses Cap's shield to cut off the mutate's head. And Cap thinks to himself, thinks we work for Zola. Kills us unless... And he goes and he kicks him. And then somebody with the crystal zaps the back of his head, and he screams.
Please, listen to me. No, Zola. Zola? No.
And then they put Ian on the block where the other one was to cut off his head and hold him down.
Zola!
Ian, close your... And then the last one, all we do is see the sound effect.
Shunk.
And it ends just like that.
Oh, come on!
I know.
Well, that's a cliffhanger.
It is. What'd you think?
Yeah, that's pretty good stuff, Rick. Pretty good stuff.
I think I go first this time as far as favorite panel is concerned.
All right.
All right. So I'm going to go with, I'm trying to see what page it is. It's going to be, if we say 1 year later is page one.
Right.
I'm going to go with page five.
Ooh, okay.
And I'm going to go with panel number four. And that's the one where Steve's laying on his back. He's got Ian resting on his stomach, and he pulls out the little ring box that has the bullet in it. And he puts it back into the ring case. And the only thing you see in this particular panel, there's no inner monologue. It's the only panel on the page without inner monologue, because it doesn't need it, because the statement itself is him closing the bullet back into the box.
Right. Yeah.
That's my favorite panel. To me, that panel says more than anything else, in the comic, as far as like, no, there's an option here and I will never take it. Wow. And, you know, you don't give up hope. I like that. To me, is a strong, strong panel.
Yeah. I'm going to dovetail that one, Rick, and I'm going to go with page eight. And it's the one, the bottom left panel where Steve's grandfather has the compress on the back of his head. And you can see Sarah in the background with her hand over her mouth and her eyes tearing up. And the grandfather says, "You don't listen to the boys, Steve. They don't know us, and they didn't know your father. He was a good man, but he lost hope." And I love that, right? Because you know, I don't like what Remenda did to Steve's dad.
Right. We both don't.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, and but I like this because presumably this is Sarah's father, redeems him a little bit here, and redeems the memory of Steve's dad for Steve. By saying he was a good man, but he just lost hope. And that, I mean, that right there is a very profound statement, because it can be easy to lose hope in the world.
Indeed.
And it's important, you know, to remember that hopelessness and taking hope away from people can lead to very bad outcomes. And I think this was a very important lesson in Steve's life, as we saw, you know, in the panel that you just mentioned, that he took that to heart and lives it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that panel. Great choice. I agree with you 100%. And I also agree that this is Sarah's dad, because I didn't give him an Irish accent. I purposely assumed the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is his first appearance, right? First appearance.
As far as I could tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. All right, Bob, what are you going to go t-shirt worthy? What are you putting on a t-shirt here?
All right. Well, this was a bit of a tough one for me, Rick, but I'm going to go with page nine, which is the next page, right? And I like the second panel. It's a crosswise panel, and it's the one where Steve is holding Ian's hand, and they are plowing ahead through the sandstorm. I like this panel, and I like it because one, he's holding Ian's hand, but it just speaks to that persistence, right? That pushing forward through the obstacles that that life, or in this case, Dimension Z, throws at them. But they're doing it together, you know, father and son. And so I love this panel.
So if I put that on a t-shirt, you'd buy it?
I might buy it. If it had a different, you know, a different word balloons, like not these, but maybe if you use the one about hope, I might buy that. Yeah.
All right. For t-shirt for me, I'm going to go with page 13, the last panel, panel five. And that's when he takes his shield and he jumps up at the mutate on the sky cycle, and he hits him in the face with his shield and his body balled behind the shield. And all the thing you see is says, "No mercy."
Love it.
I think that would look cool on a t-shirt.
That would look good. Yeah, indeed. Yeah, that's a good action shot. And I love the I love the use of the shield. Man, that shield's great. You can use it as a weapon and you can cook in it.
Exactly.
Right?
I read somewhere that, like, no, you can't cook in it. It has been proven before that the way the metal of the shield is, it does the heat. There's no properties for heat on the shield. It absorbs it and you can't have heat on the shield. So how is he cooking in it if they can't do heat?
That does make sense. I thought it had kinetic properties, but I guess that makes sense, right? Because it would be the heat exciting the atoms. I should know this because I talk about this in my class with my students. The heat excites the atoms in the shield material, but if it absorbs or diffuses the kinetics, then if the atoms were banging against each other, it wouldn't cause friction.
I'm going to use the quote.
I was more worried about the straps. Like, do they get wet?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, it's leather, right? I'm going to use the quote from Roy Thomas in last episode when anybody says something. It's a damn comic book.
Yeah, I love that. although I have a part of me was hoping to draw him in a little bit about controversy over retcons and continuity and all those sorts of things. But
it's a damn comic book, Bob.
Yeah, I know. All right. Well, I guess we have a time capsule left to do, Rick.
Yes, so. my time capsule is going to be page, is it 9? No. 6. Page 6, first panel, because it very well says 1926 on it. So I'm cheating a little bit there. But yeah. He also says, get your newspaper. It's only 2 cents. I'm putting that in a time capsule. That certainly signifies not 1926, but notwithstanding, the newspaper being 2 cents, yeah. I think is probably a good one to put in the time capsule. How about you?
All right. Well, you know, I'm going to go with I believe it's the same panel, same page, page 8 that I picked my favorite panel, but it's the first panel on that page, and it's the apartment, the tenement apartment that is shared by Sarah and Steve and presumably Sarah's father, Steve's grandfather. And, you know, I guess there's nothing about this that is particularly, you know, time capsule-ish, right? But I do love, you know, when we started reading, you know, The Sentinel of Liberty, the new series, the first issue, and was that issue, right? That Steve went back and rented his old apartment.
Yeah,
right?
It was issue 1.
Yeah. And so I love whenever we get a glimpse of the apartment that Steve lived in as a boy. We saw it in Mythos, Captain America Mythos, as drawn by Paulo Rivera. And so it gives a glimpse of what life might have been like at that time, what an apartment might have looked like at that time. I know Paulo, as we talked about, did a lot of research. He went down to the Lower East Side Tenement Museum, right? And, mm-hmm. and actually saw what the living quarters looked like at that time. So I always try to look carefully whenever you know, time-specific places like this, like Steve's tenement apartment, are rendered to see the level of detail. And we see, you know, pictures on the shelves, and, you know, and looks like a bowl of fruit in the background, and just the way, you know, it's rendered in that level of detail. That tells us something about what life might have been like at that time.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. Good pick. All right, Bob. So should we talk about next episode?
Sure. Why not?
Well, I don't know how to answer that question.
What else are we gonna talk about?
Well, let's get the episode over, Bob. I got stuff. I got things to be, people to do.
Oh, right. Well, as I said, my wife's out of town, so you're it for me, Rick. You're my date tonight.
Oh. So. All right. So, Hey, Bob. Let's get crazy. Let's get outside of the Captain America series or miniseries or specials, and let's do Captain America in somebody else's book.
Wow.
Right? We've done that before, like in She-Hulk, right? That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was.
Right? And how about we do Captain America appearing in Amazing Spider-Man?
That is unexpected.
Yeah, let's go to late 80s. That's good late 80s where we're talking.
I'd love to go to the late 80s.
I know, right? If we had a time machine. especially knowing now what we know then. Yeah, I just totally said that wrong, right? Knowing then what we know now. Knowing now I know that. I don't know. Yeah. Let's go to Amazing Spider-Man 323, 324, 325. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, that makes no sense to me. Okay. Well, there, Todd McFarlane was, you know, well into his run on the Amazing Spider-Man. And he finished around that time period with a 6-part story called The Assassin Nation Plot. See what he's doing there? Assassination.
Yeah.
It's Assassin Nation.
Yeah.
Nice. It's a 6-part story. We're not going to do all 6 parts. No. We're just going to do the last 3 parts, 4, 5, and 6, which happened in Amazing Spider-Man 323 through 325, where Captain America joins Spider-Man in his fight against Ultimatum. Remember them?
I seem to recall them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Been a while.
I know. And then we got some guest appearances with the Silver Sable and Solo and Paladin and a few other surprise guests in there. So that would be kind of cool because it's going to be art by Todd McFarlane, maybe a little Eric Larson. And you get to hear me do my voice for Spider-Man.
Wow. I can't wait to hear that. That's going to be good.
Yeah.
Let's do it. You're like throwing, you've opened Pandora's box now though. You know, we're going off into a Spider-Man
type. I might even have
what
to
next
do
Daredevil.
No, I might even have to do a Mary Jane.
Oh, I'm definitely gonna pour myself
there is I was checking these out. There is a little scene with Peter Parker and Mary Jane in bed.
Oh my.
Yeah, she's wearing a little sexy negligee.
Yeah, all right.
I'll have to do all my right. Mary Jane come hither voice.
Yeah, I can't wait for that one.
All right.
Good.
Well, Bob, as always, I gotta say, it has been so much fun wrapping cap with you.
It has. I can't wait till next week, Rick.
All right. He's Bob Lucius. I'm Rick Verbanis, and you have been listening to another episode of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast.